This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
This is Orange Ribbon, Joy 94.9's multicultural programme. The Orange Ribbon is the symbol used across Australia to represent multiculturalism, anti-racism and international understanding. At Joy 94.9, Orange Ribbon represents peace and understanding in our multicultural GLBTIQ community. If you have any comments on the programme or to ask questions, you can SMS to 0427-JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. Today with Barb and Mark. Today we're speaking with Lara and Maryse, a bicultural couple, French and Australian, who have lived in both of their home countries, as well as in England and Canada. We're going to explore the ramifications on a couple of these many different cultural differences. As usual, another interesting chat coming up here on Orange Ribbon today. So please stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, you're listening to Orange Ribbon.
And that was, of course, Running Up That Hill with Kate Bush. And we were just wondering from our guests, why that song?
It's a very good question. It could have been Kate. It could have been Sinead O'Connor. Could have been Annie Lennox. It could have been any one of these wild 80s women, I think.
But
Maryse and I were talking about this the other day. And it's just this sense of when this song was released, I think 1985, I was 14 and living in Greystanes in the western suburbs of Sydney, and you know, the whole brick veneer, meat and three veg, childhood thing, watching Countdown.
Things never change, hey?
Are they still doing that in Greystanes?
Oh, they certainly are. Nothing changes in Greystanes. And yeah, there's Kate one day running up that hill, you know.
It opened it up. A whole new world was opened up to you, is it?
Exactly.
Well, you've opened us up on the topic of your childhood, Lara, and so we have introduced you as a binational, bicultural couple, and you are clearly the Australian half of this.
Yes, the boring half. Is
And talking to three migrants, we all clearly like it here.
what more could I say? I suppose, especially with the song, I think Maryse and I were talking about the fact that we both listened to that in our childhood, so it was something that was common to both of us, even though we're in different parts of the world. So, yeah, Maryse's was a bit different to mine.
Yeah. Do tell.
You mean, why was you listening to that?
What, your childhood.
Ah, okay. Oh, yes, my childhood is really different from yours.
where are you from exactly?
Yeah, well, I come from Brittany, so I come from this village, quite small, 2,500 people. And something which is really interesting is, like, all the people who are living in the village belongs to my family.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the farms, everybody around, even the villages around, belongs to my family. I've got a huge family, especially on my mother's side. And you can't really go out and they recognize
so no
you
secrets,
all the
sorry,
time. No. You don't have any secret. You know what your parents did, your grandparents did. And they all look the same. And this is actually you who pointed that to me one day saying, look, they all look like your mum. I was like, oh, yeah.
And they all know everything about you.
Yeah, they know everything about you. Yeah.
So how did you escape, did you? Well, clearly you did, because here you sit in our studio far, far from your little village looking.
Yeah,
you
so
don't look like the rest
of
us.
Yeah, I was able to escape. Oh, well, I went to university, so I think that's one thing who helped me to just escape. And then I decided...
Was this unusual in your
I'm the only one in my family.
You're the only one.
And I decided to travel abroad, which, again, I'm the only one in my family, because not only are they all living in the same place, but don't move. They don't think about doing it as well. So, well, we're fine here. We know everybody.
You must bring people in to marry. You must bring people in to marry, because you can't marry each other.
Well, they can as well. Some of them did.
Right.
You'd think.
But it's huge. My mom's got 49 cousins.
49 cousins.
Yeah, and they've got an average of 5 kids each of them. So you know that builds. Huh? Yeah, no, it's amazing.
It is amazing. So you got out by going to uni.
Yeah, exactly. And one day I was, as I was doing a lot, wandering in the corridors of my university, and I saw on the board that there were an exchange of students between my university and one university in Finland. Mm-hmm. And for some reason I said, I need to get out of here. That seems to be the great opportunity. No kidding. This is actually anywhere.
So where was the university you were
studying? So it was called Turku. So it's, you know, I would say 400 kilometers southwest of Helsinki.
Uh-huh. Cool.
Yeah. Nice little village.
Yeah.
In the middle of winter.
I was going to say, it's pretty cold up there, hey?
Oh, it was so cold.
And dark?
And really dark, because I arrived at the start of January, so it was so dark.
Cool.
And so this was a whole new life, Finland.
Ah, yeah.
Finland opened up a world to you, and you've been traveling ever since?
Or yes, exactly. This is exactly it. Yeah, okay. No, I didn't go back. Actually, I tried all the time to just go somewhere else, get out of where I was coming from.
How long were you in Finland?
I was a year, uh-huh. And then I finished my degrees, which I was doing there, and then I went to England.
Uh-huh. Did you mean that little pun that you finish?
Sorry?
Sorry, you're talking about Finland, and you said that you finished something. I couldn't help myself.
Boom,
it
boom.
Was wrong. It was wrong on every front. But
luckily, it went over all of our heads.
I'm chuckling here to myself, though, thinking I'm hilarious. So from Finland to the UK, and we will, of course, get to that. And Laura, did any of this feel familiar to you? You clearly had to get out as well.
Yeah, it's a similar impulse, similar desire.
Did you get dragged as far as Finland?
Not initially, only as far as Melbourne.
So where are you originally from?
From Sydney. Okay. Yeah, suburbs, western suburbs of Sydney, out in Greystanes. Greystanes,
oh, yes,
it's called.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I managed to get out again, also by going to uni, but ended up going to VCA, and that was a whole new world because it was also, you know, people who were doing the arts, and that was. Yeah, something quite unheard of in Greystanes. And then, yeah, but from there I wanted to see other countries. I've had this interest for a long time, I think, in, you know, seeing the world and being outside Australia and being somewhere different. And so I also did the whole exchange program thing, and that's how I ended up in England.
Ooh.
So, so whereabouts in England did you end up?
Same place as Marie's.
Oh.
Yeah, and we will get to these things. I'm going to interrupt here for a sec because we have some sponsorship announcements to play. And when we come back, we will talk to you both about how you got to Exeter, what you were doing there, and what you found when you got to Exeter.
Ooh.
So let me just pop this on and we will be quiet.
Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Orange Ribbon, and you've just interrupted us having a little boogie in the studio to that track.
Tell us about the track.
Well, there's nothing to say really about the track. I put it in this selection to embarrass Marie's, I think. and every other French person in Melbourne. Charles Aznavour, you can't go past it.
No, you can't. Definitely.
And yeah, exactly. And it was just this, it's so daggy. It's like, I don't know. The
but it got us all moving our legs and tapping our heels. Then.
Exactly. It's the cultural equivalent of like Johnny Farnham or something.
Is he still touring?
Yes, sure. He is. Is he? Yeah, definitely. Oh, wow. Yeah, definitely.
You can't stop him.
He's famous. He's really famous.
You can try.
You can't, yeah, no, exactly.
And yeah, anyway, so we chose it because it's all about the difficulties in communicating between French and English. And when we first met, we actually didn't share a language, Maurice and I. Well, we thought we did. I mean, I could order a coffee in French. And Maurice was much better. Maurice was you know, basically faking a way through university on English.
I was much better, but we were not able to understand each other. Let's be clear on that.
Oh, yeah.
That any language whatsoever.
But it did not matter much.
So was it just sign language used a lot?
Yeah, exactly. So whatever you're saying, it sounds lovely, but never mind.
I'm sure it was very smart and very funny.
So we've determined that you were in Exeter when this great meeting met, when you were not sharing a language. And what were you doing there? How did you find each other?
Well, we're both, as we said, we both went to university there. We ended up in the same sort of faculty and one day in the same classroom. And I remember coming in late, which is...
Yes, we were late. And Barb, please don't laugh.
And, you know,
she had a beautiful hat.
It was a good hat. I wonder what happened to that hat. Anyway, there was those introductions where you go around the table, who are you, where are you from, and everyone was doing... Yeah, I'm going to do it. she's whispering at me not to tell this story, but it's a great story. Everybody's giving their usual sort of Anglo-Saxon introduction of, you know, I did this, I grew up there, I've done this and all this, and I'm here for this reason, et cetera, et cetera. And we get to about the eighth or ninth person, and it's Marie's, and she just says, "My name is Marie's, and I am from France." Nothing else. Complete silence. And I thought, oh.
She had you straight away.
She did.
Did she have you at I Am Maurice, or did she have you from I Am From France?
I don't, there was something about the way she was just holding a chin and she said the whole thing. So.
And then did you go on to do some Anglo blab about...
I don't even remember. Yeah. Probably.
Maurice, did she? Do you remember?
What did I say?
I can't remember what you said.
It
actually.
Was totally irrelevant.
Yeah, it was.
Clearly she hadn't won your heart immediately with whatever she said.
But the hat.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, the hat. Yeah, yeah.
So you're in this
you were introduced by one of the teachers, so you didn't have to introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry. Yep. I forgot that.
Oh, you see? And she said, you're someone from Australia, because remember she was from Australia.
Oh, that's right.
There you go.
You see?
Okay, so now you're in class together, and, you know, love at first sight. Did you go out on first date? Like, do tell.
Although love at first sight, we didn't go out straight away.
No, we had a lot of pizza and coffee, drank a lot of coffee in the university cafeteria and did the usual, you know, 10 weeks of would you like a cup of coffee?
I can't understand a word of what you're saying, but never mind. But we're going to drink
I could
coffee?
Talk about coffee. And, drink, so that was all right.
And this pizza place, which was just next to the church.
Awful. It was a very small town in England. There was no fine dining or cafe culture or anything like that. It was a bit of a desert. And we were the two foreigners. So we got to hang around together.
Yes, definitely. Mm.
But it took a while.
Yeah.
To answer your question.
Were you just going for coffee and pizza as friends? Or was it?
As friends, friends, yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Sort of intense friends.
Yeah. and then how did the first date happen then?
I don't know. How did it happen?
I think Maurice has remembered, but she's giggling too much. Maybe we should move on.
We should move on.
How did you negotiate the fact that you weren't understanding a whole lot of what each other was saying? Like, how did you work out that you were interested in each other if you couldn't come out and say, I am interested?
Well, kissing helps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, a little bodily contact never hurts.
Just going in. I think that's why it took 10 weeks, because we actually couldn't do the verbal, you know, subtle, nuanced, testing the waters thing by any means. So we just had to go one day, didn't we? She's shaking her head.
Shaking her head doesn't work well on radio.
No, I know, but nothing too hard. I think you're right. We couldn't do anything else. So at least we were able to understand each other then.
So did you decide to start learning French then?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah, another trick. Yeah.
She was supposed
the coffee,
to be teaching.
The pizza, then the French lesson. Sorry.
And you were an appalling teacher at that stage as well.
Yeah, I was.
So, yes.
So you learned French as just through Maurice, or did you go off and study
What did I do? Technically through talking to Marie. So then I did start. I had to. It's all a bit complicated. I actually had to move to Dublin when my degree finished, but Marie's hadn't.
Oh, right.
And in Dublin, I was working in Dublin teaching English, and that's where I started to learn French formally, because I still fancied this girl that was in Exeter. And then, we ended up moving to Paris, and I had to learn it all sync. So,
Did you ever live together when you were in the UK in that first time around?
No, we didn't.
Didn't have the negotiation around house boundaries and rules for leaving the water on or the door open or various other things that people get on each other's nerves when you're not from the same place.
Well, I think that's why we were going in on so well, because we thought it was a really short future of both of us, because we were coming from such different places so far. So, you know, it's like both corners of the world. You say, well, it's not likely that we're going to find each other somewhere at another time. So it was not really the problem of getting or talking about boundaries at that time.
So we went in a domestic space.
Which was good, actually.
Yeah.
So it's one of the reasons that the two of you sort of got together was because you were the two foreigners, sort of thing?
I'm actually convinced about that, you see. Yeah, because both of them had a kind of feeling of exile, no? Don't you see something like that?
And particularly in Exeter, I mean, if we're in London or something, it would have been different, but in this small town where we were the only foreigners and probably the only out lesbians
as well.
By that time. It was exactly
a bit of a unique experience
of being on the outside, for sure.
Definitely. Mm.
Which was a part of the story you haven't actually talked about, was the coming out process for either one of you.
Well, I can answer to that because I thought it was a great question. You know, I've never came out personally. I don't think I've got to justify.
Nobody knows you're a lesbian.
No, it's not that. I don't think I've got to justify myself. Uh-huh. And because nobody else justifies himself anyway, so why should I do it? And actually, I have to say, I just brought girls home.
Yeah.
And one day, my mom, not my father, my father thinks it's fantastic. No kidding. My mom made a comment once. She wanted to make a comment about that, and to which I answer, it's not your problem. I don't want to hear about your problem, about my private relation. Yeah. And that was the end of it. I've never had to talk about that to anybody else.
Is that? Do you reckon that that's something because of the, you know, that French public-private divide, and your private life is your business and nobody else's? Do you think it?
In me, definitely. Part? Oh, yeah. There's a part of it in me. Like, yeah. First of all, I don't have to talk about it. Doesn't change anything of who I am, and even with family, you know, your problem about my relationship is not my problem. It's your problem. That's it. Huh?
So how
and nobody comes around and say, I'm a heterosexual for that reason. Yeah, so why should I do it?
Yeah. So how old are you when you were taking
I think I was 25. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
When I brought the first girl, that's what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happened. I just called my mom. I said, I'm going this weekend. I'm coming with a girl. All right.
Were you the girl?
No. That's another story.
It sounds like one we don't have time for.
So how about yourself, Laura? Did you?
Well, I did it. Luckily, I was overseas. I was going out with boys before I met Maurice. And, Then we actually ended up moving to France together and all this. And so I was getting away with not telling my mum or the rest of my family anything, really, because they had no idea what was going on in my life. They were really far away. And then I thought, when Marie's moved in with me in Paris, I thought, I'm probably going to have to say something because she's going to start answering the phone. I just told my mum, by the way, I'm in a new relationship and it's with a woman. And, yeah, she cried.
as Anglo mothers do.
Yeah, and she went and talked to her sister, my auntie. They both cried. My auntie prayed a bit and they cried a bit more. And then they sort of, you know, grew to accept it. But I assume they grew to accept it. I wasn't there. So.
Very sensible.
By the time I'd come back, we'd been together for, I don't know, 7 years or something. And I think they were like, this looks like it's sticking. So, yeah.
So did they ever come over to visit you?
No. Did Mum ever come to France?
No, she did not. No,
because she'd come to England, hadn't she, the Christmas before?
We were already together, but
we didn't tell her.
we were just friends, were you?
Yeah.
As long as you weren't living together.
I think Marie's had gone home to France for Christmas or something and you went there.
Yes, that's true. Yeah definitely.
You were sent away, were you?
Yeah.
She wasn't sent away. She just didn't happen to be there and I didn't happen to bring it up. Mum never visited us in France.
Yeah. No. But it is an interesting difference between the Anglo parents and child and how it's all presented and the French parents and children. Are you typical of France and are your parents typical of French parents' reaction to their kid coming out?
I'd say yes, actually. Yeah, I'd say yes. Now you're asking the question, yes.
Yeah.
My reaction is entirely normal. And my mom couldn't actually say anything after that because that was really within the culture. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about my private life. I'm not talking about yours. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. You're not going to ask her about her marriage. And so.
No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that's an very interesting little tidbit that we've learned here on Or Driven. Since we're doing multicultural show, we've picked up a cultural learning here. If you have any information or questions for us here, we're at 0427-JOY-949, our SMS number, or email us onair@joy.org.au. And we're going to be right back with them after an announcement and another song.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And welcome back. You're listening to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. Again, our SMS number is 0427-JOY-949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. And I think there's somebody out on the desk if you want to phone 1-300-JOY-949 and Michael may or may not take your message. We are speaking with Maurice, who's French, and Lara, who's Australian, and they are a couple. And we've caught up to them, to their lives, to their first moving in together. But first, they must move to France from the UK. So take away the story, one of you.
Oh, well, we would talk first of all about why the song. And I think the song it epitomizes in some ways the moving to Paris, because the story of the song, they are in the middle of a crowd dancing, and they are a bit taken by the rhythm of this crowd dancing. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, you could say that actually going in Paris, it's a bit the same thing. You arrive in Paris really excited by the party and things like that. And then after a while, you get really caught in the rhythm of the town as well, you know. Mm-hmm. Like we say in French, métro, boulot, dodo, you know, you take the metro, you work and you sleep, because this is pretty much the only thing you can do in this town, and you're caught all the time with all these things going on. So
it's pretty much work hard, party hard.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he's out there. Yeah, like all big towns, actually, yeah. I suppose.
And it was really, I think for you as well, for me it was really exciting to move to Paris, like of all places. It was a sort of dream for me to, you know, be living in a city like Paris, and it was so big. There were so many people compared to Australian cities. It was so crowded, and there seemed to be so much going on all the time, and it had all of these romantic connotations. So to move there and move in with Maurice was this, we were on top of the world, I think.
Yeah.
And so crowded, I find that really interesting when you say that, because for me, when you're in a train here and people complain it's crowded, for me it's not crowded, that's just a bit people, they're just fine. Yeah. That's not what we call crowded, sorry. Wait, you call crowded when you have to push people to get into the train.
Yeah.
Before that, it's not. It's like it's still, there's plenty of room.
Maurice, had you lived in Paris by yourself before?
No, I have not.
So it was a new city for both of you, even though you were in your home country?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, and so what was it like bringing the Anglo girl home?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, it was just fun. And you were there before me, so that changed the whole story as well. You were in Paris a little bit before me, and so I was not bringing you in Paris. You were there before me, I was coming after, so this kind of procedure didn't happen. That's right. Like it's me who's bringing you in Paris.
And it wasn't your home.
Wasn't
like
my home,
in terms of your parents and your family and everything. They were all a couple of hours away by TGV in Brittany. But I'd moved over there again. We'd done all of this arrangement of okay, we'll actually see you in Paris, sort of thing. She moved directly from the UK, but I'd moved over a couple of months before from Dublin, and was staying in what turned out to be a nunnery. Yeah, I know. It was set up by my employer, and said, "Oh, I'll find you a place, you know, temporary accommodation, you get a room, and all that sort of stuff." And it was run by nuns.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you weren't allowed to have any men stay. So that was
what
it was. Hard.
But you could have girls, and they wouldn't say anything.
So Maurice visited a couple of times before she moved over and stayed, and that was all fine.
And how was your French at this point, Lara?
Shocking.
Yeah.
But I was doing my classes and all this sort of thing, and it was getting better by the day, because it had to.
Yeah.
And I was there by myself, completely immersed in the culture. But I mean, really, still to this day, I haven't learned French formally. I learned apart from those few classes just before I went, you know, after I met Maurice and when I moved to Dublin, and then a few classes when I got there. In terms of grammar and everything, I think I'm probably still at a pretty, you know, ordinary. I still make heaps of mistakes in grammar, but I understand it all and I can speak fluently, which came from living there. It's not wrong.
No, you've got a really advanced level, so let's be clear on that.
But I still make mistakes.
We all do. I do as well, me. So
that's true.
And how's the accent when you're speaking in French?
I don't know.
I think she's not as bad as me, actually, speaking in English. I think she's much better.
Yeah, but, you know, a French accent is charming. Everyone loves it. You play off it. You get
sometimes I do.
Really good mileage from it.
And why not?
Huh? Indeed. Why not? People think I'm English or American in French, which is, usually doesn't bode well in France. So you have to go in really quickly and say, no, I'm Australian.
So how did you decide to move to Paris? What was the...
I didn't want to go home. I did, because I'd met Maurice, and and it was a bit of a love at first sight. It was the first time I think I'd felt this way, and I just my studies were finished. So normally, you know, there was the exchange program. It was over. I should be going home. I probably wouldn't have wanted to go home anyway, but I particularly didn't want to go home because I'd met Maurice. So that's actually why I ended up moving to Dublin, is because I needed work that wasn't washing dishes, and that was all I'd been doing until then. So I learned to teach English as a second language in Dublin, which is something they couldn't offer in Exeter, and so that I could stay in Europe at least. Mm-hmm. And so then Maurice was going to finish her degree at about the time that I finished learning to teach English and all that sort of stuff. And we basically said, well, do you want, you know, how about it? Do you want to be with me? And all that sort of thing.
Let's try it out.
Let's give it a go and see how it works. And I think we just say, do you want to move to Paris? Who said, do you want to move to Paris?
I can't remember, actually.
I think it just seemed.
Honestly, I can't remember.
I think I wanted to learn French.
I wanted to live in Paris as well.
No doubt, no doubt.
And we said, well, why don't we all try? Yeah. Try for a little while.
I think, it's and it was really important for me to learn to speak Maurice's language and to learn about her culture, as I think you've said the same thing about coming here as well. It's very hard, I think, to get to know someone, anyone that you're in a relationship with, without making that effort in a way, because there's so much of the person is in the language and in the culture.
Yeah, this is my feeling as well. Like, if you don't learn the other person's language, you actually don't know half of this person, because I think the language, it's you. You are the language, but it's you as well. It's the way you express yourself is so, within the language.
Yeah. So I learned a lot. the way Maurice... some of the things that Maurice would do that at first I just was, think, oh, well, why just, is she... I don't know.
Is she just weird?
She's just weird.
More weird than I thought.
Just very direct. all these things that are... from the experience of living in France taught me is actually cultural. And
then you said, actually, everybody's doing it.
Everybody's like that.
Oh my God!
More than just the way people communicate, which is Barb talks about this all the time really well. It's just that is deeply cultural, but also the values that you hold and what makes you comfortable or uncomfortable and things like that. So living in Paris was a huge learning experience about French culture and therefore about Maurice. So it took me ages, even once I'd learned to speak the language, it took me ages to learn to be culturally appropriate. And I was embarrassing you constantly, basically, wasn't I?
did you just have to say, sorry, she's Australian?
Yes. You know they're different, they are. The kangaroos and things.
Especially like we come in and the polite thing to do in Australia is to be friendly. And what we see as being friendly is asking questions about people and, do you live around here?
People, private life. what are you doing? Where are you living? Do you have any children? Who are you? The police?
Yes.
I suppose I'd never thought of that because I'd do the same thing.
Yeah.
But obviously, by the sounds of it, in France, that would be seen as being nosy or.
Yeah, exactly. Like you need to know something. Yeah. You come from the police. You need to. I don't know. Is something wrong about me if you're asking all these questions?
Right. Yeah. It's really in your face. It must. I presume it must feel really in your face to French people because of that. And I think, by the same token, what we, what Anglo-Saxons, I think, often interpret as, a sort of arrogance or coldness or whatever about the French is actually them being polite to you by being too familiar and just keeping it at quite a formal sort of level. Mm-hmm. I didn't make many friends for a long time.
Did you learn to feel at home in your time there? Like, was it home? Could you have stayed forever?
Probably not at that stage. I think by the time I did have periods where I felt really at home, and after we left, I missed it terribly, and I still miss it. And there were parts of it because we lived in sort of the gay quarter of Paris, the Marais, and has more of a community feel, I think, than most other parts of Paris. That is, you get to know the people in the bakery and the local cafe and the local newsagent. They know you and all that sort of stuff. And so that started to feel really comfortable after a while. You never feel. I think you never feel completely at home in another language in a city that's. Doesn't embrace multiculturalism as a city and as a country, and this is one of the issues I think that France has. So you're not French, you're on the outside because you're not French. So
all right, I'm going to have to interrupt this thought for a few announcements and one last song, and then we'll come back and continue talking about what it's like to live in one of your countries, but it's going to be the other country.
Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Orange Ribbon, and that was a beautiful song. So tell us a bit about it.
Well, the title is So Long, Marianne, and we thought it was actually a good song to move from this, going from France to Australia, because, Marianne is the figure of the French Revolution, and So Long, Marianne, which means we will live in it. And if you can, the song is a bit sad as well, so he's got a bit of regrets, and that was a bit us as well, huh?
For sure.
Yeah.
During the break, you told us how long you were in France, but tell the listeners, how long you were there.
Hi, Mum. No. 5 years in total. Yeah, which means, yes, we've been here now 7 years. So, yeah. I've been in Australia longer than France. I just realised that that's just overlapped.
Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. No, and it was really sad to leave. I was really sad to leave Paris and all of that, but it was just so comfortable coming home as well.
So how did that come about, the decision to move?
We were quite well organized because we came here on holiday in 1999 and said, well, what should we do if we want to come in Australia? What kind of procedure should we do in order for me to get my permanent visa and things like that? Because if we all decided to do so and to go on with our relationship, we need to actually organize it to make it as smooth as possible. So then when we came in 1999, we went and see if they were doing, if I could get my permanent visa by just living with Lara, and it was possible. So we started to do everything you had to do to make it easy.
Yeah, until that stage we hadn't even looked into whether same-sex relationships were recognised. But yeah, so it was like the green card application, which a lot of anyone who's listening to this show on multiculturalism probably knows, that whole you've got to prove that you've been in a relationship for at least a year, show your bills, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Photos, yeah, anything we can find. Videos of us dancing in nightclubs, all this stuff, you know, whatever. So we were organised. And I think the decision was, we were both feeling, I think, a bit stuck in France. Because you were feeling a bit the same way, weren't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Just that we were teaching, I was teaching English, and Marie's had started teaching French because I got the job in the school where I was working when we first arrived. And it was just, France has got a sort of quite a different system, professional system, I think, and a lot of it's state-based. And in order to sort of get jobs in the state system and progress, there's a lot of exams. And to get into the first set of exams, you actually have to have a degree in France. And get your degrees recognised in France is a long process. It was just basically very hard to move on. We decided we wanted to, you know, do more study and do something else with our lives than teaching languages. And we thought, I also want to go home. And you also wanted to come to Australia.
Oh, yes, definitely, of course.
A bit about the,
While you were laughing sometime and I wasn't. Yeah.
Exactly. So.
Cool. Just to let you know, we just had a message in from Tanya. She said, hi, Orange Ribbon crew. I'm really enjoying the show today. So thanks very much for messaging in, Tanya. And if anyone else would like to message in, it's 0427JOY949 or on air at joy.org.au.
So now you've moved to Australia and Maurice, did you arrive as a permanent resident?
Well, I think, if I remember well, I got my permanent residency the day before we left Paris. I went and got it at the embassy.
Yeah.
You don't get it anywhere else.
I got mine in the post,
unless
actually.
It's illegal.
It's an internet website.
A guy named Omar on the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and how did you decide to move to Melbourne as opposed to Sydney?
Because Lara was talking about Melbourne all the time. Well, Melbourne was great, beautiful, fantastic, the best town in the South Hemisphere.
And it is.
Which I think she's right, actually.
Yeah. Just the South Hemisphere?
Well, Maurice is constantly laughing about Australian claims to the best or the biggest of the Southern Hemisphere. Well, you know. We tried to live in Sydney, though. I tried. I was sort of like, you know, I haven't been anywhere near my family for such a long time. I had the guilts for a while and thought, we'll give it a go. And we did try. We lived with my cousin in Sydney for 6 months before we moved down. But I hated it. I hate Sydney. And I hate being near my family.
You're so miserable in Sydney. It's terrible for you.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
You think it's disproportionate, don't you? But you don't like Sydney.
I don't like Sydney as well, but
you don't have the same.
A bit further, but
no, that's true.
You seem a bit more passionate about it.
Yeah, she's really passionate about the way she dislikes
Sydney. It's in my bones. If you'd grown up in Greystones, you'd hate Sydney.
We're just at the airport and she starts to complain, not good coffee or good thing. Nothing is good there. Like,
the traffic. What about the traffic?
The worst, like, you've got a point.
I've got a point. I'm right.
So how did you find it moving here, Maurice?
Well, for me, moving here was something really interesting. It's like I discovered things about Lara when she was laughing at things, different things when she wasn't laughing, when things she was laughing at, which I would find quite upsetting and not really funny. And she thought it was really funny. She was rolling on the floor laughing like mad. I was like, why are you laughing at that? It's not funny. And then he said, ah. Everyone's laughing. Oh, there's people. Something behind that, obviously.
Again, they're all weird humans.
And all, yeah, and being so friendly and things like that. So, yeah, so you had to get used to that, I suppose. Yeah.
And how did you find that whole friendliness?
Well, it took me a while, yeah. First of all. But and there is several levels, because there is a level of the language which I'm still not really able to master really properly as I would like to. Okay, let's be clear on that. And then, so first of all, you've got the language, then you've got the culture, and then the way people talk to you when you meet them for the first time. And not only you're not feeling really comfortable because you don't speak properly the language, but on the top of that, they ask you all these private questions. I said, oh my God. And it took me a while until I actually decided, but I had to make the mental decision to say, well, now I'm going to, all the questions this person is going to ask me, I'm going to ask them back. Uh-huh. Because I think this is the first procedure you should do. This is the first thing you should do here. So that's what I decided after, I don't know, a year. I said, well, no, I'm going to ask back every question.
Right.
And they started to be happy about me.
That's pretty good.
So what language do you speak at home? And is it the same as when you were in France?
We sort of, I don't know, we sort of speak...
I think we speak French, English, it's...
Franglais.
Franglais, yeah. And if we're tired, we speak our own languages probably more. Although, I don't know, we sort of blend it, and we did in Paris too. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a tricky thing when other people sort of come in, or when you've got visitors or anything, you have to try and remember to speak just the one language,
yeah. Cool. Mm. So when you moved here, have you kept your French sort of...
Look, I don't know. I think it's a very domestic sort of French.
Kitchen
it's
language.
Like, did you buy milk sort of French?
Is it just swearing and stuff
and
like
swearing,
that?
And swearing, yes.
No, Lara doesn't swear actually in French.
Oh, really?
No, that's actually good. Not yet. I swear.
Well, not,
in
not quite as, yeah, with the same figure as you do.
But in this country, that's an appropriate thing to do.
Yeah.
What, to swear?
Yeah, in English.
It's inappropriate.
It's very appropriate. For Australians.
Except with your mum.
Except with my mother. You're not allowed to swear in front of my mother. No. And Marie forgets that because it's just another word.
Which for me doesn't have any meaning.
And you do it with your accent. It's quite cute, you know. But it's like, oh, my God.
Did she really say what I thought she said?
Yeah, that's what she said, in the sweetest possible way.
Surely in that accent it sounds better.
I think so. I think you can get away with a lot more.
So just on that, how does your mother... and the rest of your family accept and...
They love Marais.
Yeah. Yes, they are. They do, actually.
With them far better than I do. It's always like, you know, when I'm coming, how's Marais coming too? And I'm like, oh, I'm coming. That's a start. Yeah, but is Marais coming? And they like that you can fix things. I think that's Marais goes to my mum's house, my auntie's house, and fixes everything. She fixes things on the computer.
Yeah.
She bricoles
the wardrobe,
the thing, you know, all the little...
I'm a fixer.
Oh,
right. And I love that.
Yeah,
I'm really handy.
Yeah, and you're a good diplomat, I think. So you're really, it's very good to have you in, you know, Christmas with the family.
So you've got that coming up, hey?
Yes, we do. We do.
Up in Sydney?
Yes, indeed.
You sound like you're looking forward to it.
Oh, so much.
So much.
Yeah, 3 days.
On that positive note, I'm afraid we have to wrap it up for today. Want to thank our guests profusely for their time on such a lovely Saturday and for sharing their various stories. And we'll wrap it up with some announcements. And then do we come back and talk about Bandcamp, or do we?
We just... play a bit more music and then that's it. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. You've been listening to Orange Ribbon with Mark and Barb and Lara and Maries.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.